Hello everyone, welcome to the as promised and as advertised second period of JTalk Extra Time, this one focusing exclusively on the previous weekend's J3 action. Take it away.
We should talk about J3 while we're still willing and able, I think. So the games from the weekend, we'll mention them all at least in passing. So yeah, up in Tohoku, Hachinohe were beaten 2-0 at home by Blaubitz Akita. So that means Akita are now on top of the table, 3 wins from 3 games so far and no goals conceded. Pretty impressive record. Hachinohe had some chances and pretty driving rain here. Header cleared off the line in the first half and another header that came back off the post 10 minutes into the second half. Now, Akita hit the front in the 66th minute here. Some pretty ropey goalkeeping from Hachinohe's keeper Chikara Hanada allowed Ryota Nakamura to score. What happened was Hanada parried Nakamura's header straight back to him and Nakamura was able to sweep it home. And a thumping header from Han Hogang from a corner about 11 minutes later sealed the win for Akita. Did you see any of this game, Stu? Did you see the highlights?
Yeah, I think for Nakamura's goal, I think the goalkeeper was just in a bad position because I think he saved Nakamura's initial effort, but his whole body was behind the line. It was only his hands that were in front of the line, so he had no option but to just push it out, and then obviously Nakamura is there. I think Hachinohe had chances while the game was still at 0-0 to go in front. I think they hit the post with a header, and I think Akita's goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka made a really good save in the first half. And but yeah, it's another test passed by Akita, really. Yeah, they are the undisputed best team in Tohoku at this point in time.
Yeah, looking good for them at the moment. Now, Akita are joined at the top of the table, Stu, by Roasso Kumamoto. They also have 3 wins from the first 3 games. They've gone about it in a slightly different fashion, though, including the crazy match at Egao Kanko Stadium over the weekend, beating Seretse Osaka under-23s 5-3. I would make a joke about it being men against boys, but since it literally was, we may as well just get into it. Kumamoto were 2-0 up at the break, on goals from Toshiki Takahashi and Sou Kawahara. The Kawahara goal was a deflected cross that went straight through the legs of Seretse's goalkeeper on Jun Su, which I'm sure you'll have something to say about in a moment. Now, the heavy rain came into the picture in the second half, and a deluge of goals came with it. Hikaru Nakahara made it 3-0 with another goal through on Jun Su's legs, and the goalkeeper and a defender got in each other's way to gift Takahashi his second and Kumamoto's fourth in the 65th minute. Seretse did get a goal back 3 minutes later with a deflected header from Shota Fujio, but it was 5-1 soon after that with Nakahara grabbing his second of the evening. Ryuji Sawakami got another headed consolation for Seretse with about 10 minutes left. But then in second half stoppage time, Kumamoto's goalkeeper Keiichi Yama conceded a penalty by tackling a Seretse forward who'd gone clean through after a defender had slipped on the slippy surface. Fujio tucked away the penalty for his second goal of the game. So it finished 5-3. Pretty much defies analysis, this game. Stu, what did you make of it?
I have a lot to say about this game, but we're nearly at 1 a.m, so I'll trim my thoughts. I think, I think Ahn Jung-soo should be rested after.
Did you say rested or arrested?
Yeah, after this Wednesday's game against Gifu, obviously, because I want him in goal for that, because it was bad. That I've said this, I think I've said this 2 or 3 times today, but it was flat out just bad. It was just a poor display of goalkeeping. But what I will say is that Kumamoto, I mean, everybody who kind of knows their manager Takeshi Oki, they will have in mind an idea of how he likes to play football, which is pass, 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 pass. But this incarnation of Rasa Kumamoto, especially down their left-hand side where they've got Kaito Taniguchi, who plays on the left wing, and they've got this left-back called Hiroto Ishikawa, who down that left-hand side, they look absolutely lethal, and they try and go down that left-hand side almost all the time. I think four of their five goals came from the left-hand side, and they're really, really good down the wing. It reminds me a little bit of when Gifu had Takayuki Fukumura at left-back and Kyogo Furuhashi on left wing. Like, inevitably, the ball went there most of the time because that's where the danger comes from, and I think that's going to be a feature to look for Kumamoto going forward. There's another player that I just want to kind of pick up and kind of showcase to other people. When Oki was in charge at Gifu, the first signing that he made was Yoshihiro Shoji, and Shoji plays at the base of the midfield. So Oki often plays three in midfield. He plays one holder and two players further forward. For Kumamoto, his new kind of holding midfielder is a player called Shota Aizawa, who I've been highly impressed with, and I couldn't place him because I thought he must have come from university because I hadn't heard of him before. But he's actually come a really weird route into the J-League. He played in the Queensland League in Australia for a year before coming back to Japan to play for Kamakura International, which is an international kind of base side in Kamakura, which is in Kanagawa. I think it's Kanagawa. Yeah, it is.
Correct.
Yeah, and it's kind of a... But they played in the Kanagawa or Kanto, like, lower leagues. So kind of like 8th or 9th
tier. Yeah, it's not a very high
level. Yeah, it's not a very high level, but obviously someone had recommended Aizawa to Oki or the Kumamoto board. And he's come in and he's played absolutely brilliantly. He's done what Yoshihiro Shoji did for Gifu, but he's done it at, obviously, like, coming from kind of a really kind of low level of football. I actually don't know how good Kamakura International is, or maybe someone can help us out, but he looks really, really good. I'm kind of really envious of Oki being able to get hold of him because he looks like a metronome in midfield. He just sits at the base, he just picks the ball up, and more often than not, he just pings it out to the left-hand side and he lets Ishikawa and Taniguchi do their thing from there. And so, yeah, they look good going forward. They look a bit suspect defensively because, yeah, the goalkeeper had a little bit of a mental breakdown going into extra time because he thought the best thing to do was scissor tackle a player when they were 5-2 up.
That point, isn't it funny that you often hear the phrase a striker's tackle to refer to a terrible attempt at winning the ball? But I think goalkeepers get off lightly here because goalkeepers are pretty bad at tackling as well, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was just... I mean, I didn't know whether to laugh or to be angry at the goalkeeper. And I'm pretty sure he got a bollock in when he got back into the dressing room. Maybe he just wanted a bit of extra work. I don't know. But, it was... He did... I don't know why he did it.
It looked like someone who'd seen a lot of tackles on TV but never actually tried to do one before.
Yeah, he just wrapped his legs around him. It was bizarre. But,
Okay.
Yeah,
Kumamoto are good. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, Kumamoto are good. There's no getting around that, and they'll be good for the remainder of the year, I would assume, because I think once these players get a lot more kind of game experience in Orki's system, I think they'll be a difficult team to get past. So yeah, I'm very impressed with Rasa Kumamoto.
Yeah, I think the words I'd use for Kumamoto, based on what I've seen, this is only highlights, but they are an awkward team to play against. They have a lot of power, they have a lot of physicality, and I can see them doing well, because I think there's quite a few teams in J3 who find that combination of some quite quick and skillful players, but also some quite physical. Tough. It sounds like I'm denigrating Kumamoto. I don't mean it. I mean it in a positive sense.
Yeah.
I think they do have weaknesses, but you really have to work to get at them, I think.
Yes.
So okay, we'll nip back up north just for a minute, Stu, to talk about Fukushima's 1-1 draw with Iwate over the weekend. Now, this was almost a surprise win for Iwate, wasn't it? Fukushima had the better of the first half in terms of chances, but a 41st-minute goal from Kazuhito Kishida meant that Iwate were one up at half-time. Now, it stayed that way until the 76th minute. A penalty was awarded against the Iwate defender Shun Morishita, for a handball, but he was pretty adamant that the ball had hit him in the chest. Now, there wasn't a good angle or a conclusive angle on the replays that I saw, but I think he was probably right. I don't think he did handle this ball. But anyway, Ryosuke Tamura tucked away the spot kick and salvaged a draw for Fukushima here. There was another 1-1 draw at Imabari, so a first J3 goal and home point. For the new boys, FC Imabari against Kagoshima. This game was nil at half time, but Imabari did hit the bar and forced a great save from Kagoshima's goalkeeper, Shogo Onishi. Kaito Miyake also hit the bar with a fine effort for Kagoshima, which I think the goalkeeper might have got a touch on the way through, but I'm not sure. Kagoshima did hit the front through Taku Ushinohama 11 minutes into the second half. I think Imabari's goalkeeper, Tomohito Shugo, will be disappointed he didn't keep it out, though. But Imabari did get the goal that they really wanted with just 5 minutes left. A header from Masamichi Hayashi made it 1-1. And there was even time for Imabari to nearly win it. It was Takafumi Yamada who had a header well saved by Onishi. So these two games, Fukushima Iwate was 1-1 and Imabari Kagoshima was 1-1. Stu, did you have any comments on either of these two?
Yeah, I think Iwate can feel very aggrieved, because I don't think it looked like a penalty at all. And I think Morishita just kind of sat in the area. I think he was staging a sit-down protest.
Yeah, my son does that when it's time to go home from the park and he doesn't want to go, yeah.
I think, it's one of the things as well about DAZN. I think J3, I think they get a bit of short shrift with the cameras. I think I mentioned a little bit about this last week, but the cameras and the replays, because there wasn't a conclusive angle. And there's something in the Toyama game as well, where they lost against Numazu, that I think it was a shot that they had that it looked like it was saved from the goalkeeper, but I couldn't tell. But the replay camera was slow, and it was really poorly done as well. So I think, like, in the same way that in J3 you get the worst refs, I think DAZN stick their worst camera people on J3 duty. But I digress. I think baby steps for Iwate, and I think that I think Imabari were a good value for their 1-1 draw. I think they could have won it right at the end, like you said, like half a meter either side of Onishi, and that's a 2-1 win for Imabari. And I think they've acquitted themselves really well. They haven't looked out of place in J3. They've come through kind of three tough games. They've had they obviously drew in Gifu first up. They lost narrowly against Kumamoto, which is looking like a result that kind of is not disrespectful, and they've taken a draw against Kagoshima, so they seem to be settling into J3 life pretty nicely. And I think that the schedule will open up soon enough for them, I think, and once they get this initial batch of tough games out of the way. And I think they play Kamata Marisanuki in the real Shikoku Derby this year, and that would be an ideal time for them to get their first win, I think.
Mm-hmm. All good points. Yeah, I feel like you're getting some Gifu-related excuses in early for the season by talking about the referees and the camera angles in J3. I noted that with interest. Okay, there was one goalless game on the J3 card over the weekend, Stu. Sagamihara against Nagano. This game finished 0-0. Not a great deal for us to talk about, I don't think. I did notice this is Sagamihara's second straight goalless home draw, though, because they had a scoreless draw against YSCC, didn't they, back in round one as well. Ryosuke Tada had Sagamihara's best chance, but he headed wide in the first half. And I thought there was a decent shout for a handball from Sagamihara here as well in the second half. I think Kanta Makino, the Nagano defender, seemed to handle it. At least in my opinion, it looked like a hand, but nothing was given. Finished 0-0. We'll talk in more detail about Gifu's game against Kamatamari Saneki. Now, this was another 1-1 draw. Very rough conditions weather-wise at Nagaragawa. The pitch was pretty much saturated with water by the time the second half came around. Saneki took what for my money was a bit of a surprise lead in the 38th minute. Gifu's goalkeeper Takuya Matsumoto made a mistake with a poor punch. The ball ended up coming back off his own crossbar, and Mark Ajay Kurita was on hand to tuck away the loose ball, and Hiroyuki Takasaki hit the crossbar for Gifu with a delightful chip right at the end of the first half. But Gifu levelled with just 4 minutes left of the 90 with a low drive from Kentaro Kai from outside the box. And yeah, there was still time for Gifu to nearly win it. Takasaki had a late kind of dinked effort, just cleared off the Saneki goal line. So Sagamihara and Nagano was 0-0. Stu, not a great deal to write home about. But what about the Gifu Saneki game?
Yeah, I think. There are two ways to look at this. You can look at it as they Gifu equalised with 4 minutes to go, so it could have been worse. But I think that if the conditions had have been even relatively okay, I think Gifu would have won this game. But having said that, Kamatamare Saneki brought in Kenta Shimizu back in goal, and they brought in Kazumasa Takagi in the midfield, two highly experienced players who were ready to step up and fight and to bring a bit of experience to what has been a very young Saneki team this year. Like Gifu, I think Ryoichi Maeda's had a poor start to the year. It wouldn't surprise me if Takasaki started against Seretso under 23s on Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, Matsumoto made a really bad mistake for the goal. I don't understand how you can punch it and it ends up going behind you off the crossbar. I mean, the weather had to play a part in it, but it's still an inexcusable mistake that resulted in a Saneki goal. And yeah, Kentaro Kai got us out of jail. I would just say, I thought this was a thing of the past, but Kenta Shimizu, the Saneki goalkeeper, doesn't have his name on the back of his shirt. He has Shimi Ken.
Mm.
I feel sick. I think that is ridiculous.
Do you think a points deduction's in order, or do you want to wait and see the final standings at the end of the season?
I think he should have to throw the ball into the back of his net. Or change. I thought that kind of thing was outlawed this year. I thought nicknames were. Nicknames are bad names. Sorry. but yeah, I think all things being equal, Gifu actually better than Saneki. Just this day, the conditions and some good goalkeeping and some kind of organized defending from Saneki kind of denied us what should have been a win, but unbeaten, you got to take positives where they come from, and move on from there.
Fair enough. Okay. Talking of taking positives where we can find them, Stu, we should talk about Fujieda's game against YSCC, which finished 5-2 to the home side. Now, YSCC shipped four goals just in the second half last time out, didn't they? They weren't any tighter at the back this time. I actually watched the first half of this game live, and they conceded inside the first minute. A low 20-yard drive from Taisuke Mizuno gave Fujieda the perfect start here. YSCC were level in the 15th minute with a PK penalty, very harshly awarded for a handball when a Fujieda defender was like sliding on the ground to block a cross. It did hit his hand, which I think makes it a penalty under the new rules, but, you know, kind of a ridiculous. Not sure what he was supposed to do with the offending appendage in that situation. Anyway, Takuya Miyamoto scored the penalty, so it was 1-1 after 15 minutes. But just 5 minutes later, Tsugatoshi Oishi went round the YSCC goalkeeper to make it 2-1. Pretty poor defending all round. That's the way it stayed until the end of the first half. But into the second, Mizuno crossed for Oishi to score his second and Fujieda's third in the 57th minute. And Oishi completed his hat-trick with a very emphatic drive just 6 minutes later. After that, I think the game was already won, but there was a promising cameo from YSCC's Nigerian forward Onye Ogochukwu. He teed up a goal for Yutaro Yanagi, which was actually very well taken. And Ogochukwu also forced a flying save from Fujieda's goalkeeper Takuya Sugimoto. At the other end, Takumi Kiyomoto scored another thumping drive and sealed a 5-2 win for Fujieda. Do you think Yuki Stalf told YSCC to try and keep it tight for the first 20 minutes? Or
he should have done.
Yeah.
There seemed to be a lot of early goals this weekend just across the three divisions. Like obviously we spoke about Olmia. I think Kyogo actually scored a really early goal for Kobe as well. It's a good goal for Mizuno as well, but I think at this level Oishi is good. He knows where the soft spots are in J3 defenses. It was the consummate hat trick. He did really well, and the first goal was full of confidence and a very good finish from a tight angle. His third goal was just you knew what was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen. The goalkeeper knew what was going to happen. He knew he was just going to bang it into the back of the net and be done with it. That's he's the all time leading goal scorer in J3 now.
Not is it now. 57?
Yeah, 57. He's miles. I say now, but he's miles in front of Noriaki Fujimoto, who's at Kobe now. Fujieda slowly clicking into gear. I think they've got a good system. I think YSCC, I think it's not a stretch to say that they need to head back to the drawing board on the defensive side, but I suppose you're always guaranteed, well, you're not always guaranteed goals because they finished 0-0 against Sagamihara, but yeah, I think they need to stop the rot pretty quickly. But Fujieda looking good.
Yeah, I think YSCC's problem is of many, I should add. But I think at the moment they're playing with like three centre backs, and that can be fine depending on who the three centre backs are and what's in front of them. I don't think any of the three players playing there at the moment are bad players. Kei Munichika in particular is quite experienced, playing for YSCC and I think at least one other J League team, but they just look so wide open. There's too much space between, between these three centre backs. I'd be very interested to see. We'll talk about the Wednesday fixtures in a moment, but YSCC hosting Hachinohe, a game which I think they'll feel is winnable. I wonder if they might switch to perhaps a flat back four just to see how it goes. And I also wonder if Onye Ogochukwu, who I don't just like saying his name, although it is pleasing, but I think he did really well when he came on. He might have done enough to perhaps justify getting more minutes, maybe even a start. But it's a tricky one because obviously YSCC, you know, it's more about the project and the overall picture than sort of a knee-jerk reaction to get results. So they might persist, but I think the fact that they've let in, you know, nine goals in a game and a half might mean that they try something a little bit different at the back on Wednesday. We'll wait and see. Fujieda looking good though. Okay, two more games from the J3 slate before we wrap up this podcast, I think, Stu. So Numazu picked up a pretty handy 1-0 win away at Toyama at the weekend. I felt, based on the highlights, this is like a pretty low quality game. I apologise if that's harsh on anybody involved. Numazu came closest there in the first half. Takumi Hama hit the crossbar And in the second half, Numazu's goalkeeper Yuya Nagasawa made a great save from Tepe Usui to keep it goalless. Numazu had to wait until the 89th minute to grab a winner. Ryo Watanabe was alive to a heavy back pass, pounced on it, and then hit a superb curling finish to win it for the visitors. The goal was a bit not in keeping with the rest of the quality of the game. It was a brilliant goal. Panasonic Stadium in Suita, Ganari Tottori picked up a 3-1 win over Gamba Osaka's under-23 side. Now, this game was nil-nil at the break, but I don't know if you saw, one of my moments of the weekend was 39-year-old Toshi Fernandinho. Yeah, well, he sent two of the young lads to the shops, didn't he?
He did, yes.
And then hit the post. It would have been a brilliant solo goal. Just kind of slalomed through the defence. Fantastic. But it wasn't to be. But Tottori took full control in the second half. Three well-taken goals from their captain, Masataka Kani, followed by Yuya Taguchi and Rikito Inoue in quick succession. And Gamba sort of defined the consolation goal in the third minute of second half stoppage time when Kohei Okuno put in what was, to be fair, a pretty good header. But it was academic at that point. Tottori had done enough to get the points. Anything to pick out from these two away wins? Stu, Numazu at Toyama, Tottori at Gamba's under-23s?
Not really for Toyama or Numazu. It was a pretty low-quality game, like you said. I think interesting that for Gainare, like, Fernandinho started. Usually he's been used sparingly, as befits a 39-year-old. but he looked good. Like you said, he nearly scored one of the goals of the year, but his dinked effort hit the post. I think physically and kind of technically, Gainari Tottori wore Gamba down in the first half, but Gamba were kind of architects of their own downfall, trying to play out from the back, but that's what they do, right? Like, it's the raison d'etre of the under-23 teams, that the result doesn't really matter that much as long as they play in the way that the top team plays. So, whatever for them. But yeah, decent win for Tottori and Numazu as well.
Yeah, I think games against the under-23 sides can be a bit of sort of banana skin, can't they? So Tottori will be pleased that they successfully navigated that and ended up with quite a comfortable 3 points in the end. Okay, Stu, we'll take a quick look ahead to busy Wednesday night, because obviously we've got the full slate of games in J2 where it's round five, but we also have a full round, a full card of J3 games. Round four, of course, for the third tier. Now, the games, most of the games kick off at 7 p.m. as is customary. We do have a couple of outliers though, don't we? So Iwate against Fujieda is going to kick off at 3 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon, with Numazu against Sagamihara at 4 p.m. Pretty sure this is to do with the floodlight issues at the respective home grounds, isn't it? That they can't hold sort of evening games under the lights.
That's right. They don't have bright enough lights in their floodlights.
I think maybe we should do a sweepstake on the attendance for these games.
Well, I was actually going to ask you that. Like, I was going to say, like, what's the over under for a 3 p.m. kickoff on a Wednesday
In the rain?
Yeah, in the rain. Do you think there'll be more than 100 people there? I don't know. I think
for Iwate. I think you're looking at 300 or 400.
I doubt there's that
not
many
that
there.
Many.
I'd be surprised if there's more than 150 there.
Yeah, people should tweet at us and tell us what they think, shouldn't they? Before the official
absolutely
numbers
they should,
come in.
Yeah.
It's interesting times. Yeah, COVID enforced midweek afternoon games. Bizarre. Okay, so the 7 o'clock games then, the more traditional ones on the slate. YSCC, as I mentioned, hosting Hachinohe this midweek. Nagano take on Fukushima. A game that I like the look of is Toyama hosting Akita. Of course, Akita going for a fourth straight win to keep them on top of the pile. Sanuki against Imabari also looks quite tasty. Kumamoto are hosting Gamba Osaka's under-23s. Ordinarily wouldn't be that much to write home about, but Kumamoto, could make it four wins on the bounce if they win. Kagoshima taking on Tottori, another interesting looking game. And Gifu are on the road at Seretse Osaka. under 23, so I guess they'll be in the cavernous environs of Yanmar, will they, Stu, for this one?
I do hope so.
Yeah, and how do you think it's gonna go?
I think Gifu will win. I think I'm gonna stick my neck out and say Takasaki will score, because I think he'll start.
He should have had one. He deserved one at the weekend.
Yes, he did. Takasaki, he did. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we confidently predicted a Gifu win against Sanaki. It didn't happen.
Yep.
But it's definitely going to happen this time.
Get me back on that horse. I'm all good.
Okay. Well, it'll come. It'll come. We just got to keep plugging away. Okay. Well, I think we did a pretty marathon roundup of the weekend's games, Stu. So thanks for keeping me company through that. Where can people follow us or find out what we're doing during the week?
If you want to find out what we're doing, I wouldn't recommend that. But if you want to talk to me about football or any other things, just drop me a line at sushi_football. And I presume you're at J2 Canto Bites, unless you've changed.
No court orders this week, so I'm still in the same place. Yeah, but I usually try and just interject any of your conversations that are public. I just try and hijack them with gifts and things. So, we want to say thanks before we wrap up to the Patreons. Of course, we really appreciate the support. Keeps the mics on, keeps the podcast ticking over. So we really appreciate that. And thanks again for helping us out. We hope you enjoy the shows that we're putting out. We're still negotiating, Stu, about how we're going to cover the midweek games this week. Obviously, real world pressures mean that it might not be possible for us to get together and have a chin wag, have a chat in a timely manner together. We might do kind of something individually that we can put out for the patrons this week. But we won't say anything concrete just now because we're still working on that. I think, but yeah, as always, thanks everybody for listening. And if you have chance, enjoy the J2 and J3 bumper week of midweek games. And I think we'll be back again for sure this time next week, and we'll be looking at the games from next weekend. We will be looking at the games from next weekend next week. Does that make sense? It made sense in my head.
Yeah, okay. I understand.
We'll be back. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Yeah, have a good one. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.